Welcome to the Hours. That's Mark. I'm Tyler. His hair is longer. Mine's grayer. If you didn't know who is who, both Mark and I were on the road just this last week running clinics. We both worked with some savvy programs, and we're going to tell you some of our learnings from that. I also had the opportunity to speak at the North Carolina Coaches Association Clinic, a few hundred coaches. I got to share lock left with them, as well as how to use small-sided games in their practices and how to make their games approach more savvy. So Mark and I are going to go through and we're going to share a couple of learnings from what we did teaching coaches this last week. Mark, before we share learnings, tell everybody a little bit about where you were. I think I shared I was in North Carolina for the Coaches Clinic in South Carolina, working with one of our programs in Charleston, South Carolina.
Yeah, I was in Iowa working with one of our annual members. We were able to work with their middle school program and their high school program. So it was really cool experience to see a high school program that's in year two and we're going deeper and then like pivot really fast. And these kids know nothing. Let's start from like really square one. And so I'm excited to learn or share some of my learnings and some of my takeaways with you, with the group. Man, I'm going to put you on the spot here just to get us started because you sent me a really cool text. You just checked in like, hey, just presented to the Coaches Association in North Carolina. And it got me rethinking about, I think you said like some drills or just some approach method stuff. So I always say the teacher learns more than everybody else. So doing a podcast, presenting at a clinic, it makes you just like sharpen your thinking, clearly communicate things, work on some things that you've already taught, but maybe evolved over the years. So what were some of those takeaways from the coaches clinic before we get to the program clinic?
More than previous presentations, I got into a dialogue with the coaches in the audience early and often and asked them to dialogue with each other. And big snaps to that group of coaches. They were very willing to talk, very willing to share, and very open to an opposing opinion. So early on in our, we call it the game method, where I was teaching them how to adopt more of a games approach to their practices, I asked them what percent to share with the other coaches near them, what percent of their practices they played games versus ran drills. And then asked them to share with me. I got, you know, five or six, and by the show of hands and nods of agreement, across the board, it was 15 to 20% of their practices they would play games.
My guess was going to be 25%. Yeah. And I was even low. I mean, I was too high, actually.
You were too high. And so my biggest learning, we'll dive in. Let's make sure we come back to that statistic as well. But here's my biggest learning as a teacher and as a coach, and hopefully you can take this away as well. I prepared. I had a presentation. I had a plan. I went in there, and the moment I got that information, it tweaked and changed my articulation, my teaching, where I spent most of my time, and the expectations I had of my audience. As a coach with your players, how often do you ask questions and listen to them and allow that to adjust your plan, your practice plan, what you're teaching, what they need, how long you spend on something? My biggest learning was I need to do that more in coaching players, coaching coaches, leading my family. I need to do that more leading my employees. I had a conversation with an employee yesterday and I implemented it then. I had a perception and I said, I asked questions. How do you feel you've done over the past 3 months according to these things? And when I heard their perspective, it completely changed how I was going to frame my feedback in coaching because I was able to connect it to their pain points. And so listening first makes us a better teacher. I'd say that was my biggest takeaway and learning from the whole thing.
Yeah. I had a similar experience yesterday, actually. So for those that don't know, we work with athletic departments as well. We are working with a collegiate athletic department. And at the very beginning of our time together, we sent all the coaches a Google form, self-evaluation of their program. And then we sent all their athletes a similar form, but we got a coach's perspective. We got an athlete's perspective. And we went over those over the month of June with the coaches. So we were in our July meeting And I was running this meeting and I just asked the coaches for, hey, what was your big takeaway? Like seeing the coaches in your athletic department, where they were, and then seeing athletes all across the board. And they said, you know, the communication piece, the fact that we feel like our door is open, but the athletes don't necessarily feel like that. And like instantly it was like, oh, well, I had a plan for our time together, but we're going to spend the next 15 to 20 minutes on how to facilitate, how to foster more communication. So it's really good. Just to, it would be a miss on my part to be like, oh, okay, cool. All right. Moving on to the prepared content. Right. So it's nice to be curious and meet people where they are. Anytime I'm coaching my own team or I walk into a gym in Iowa, random high school, it's always like we have a plan, but you really don't know the execution of that plan or how to adjust until you get started. I mean, getting started is the path to getting things done. It's like you can plan for anything in life, for work, for teaching, for coaching. But until you get started, instantly or very quickly, you're going to be like, ah, this is the actual way to improvement.
Yeah, let me share this as a specific way to get started for coaches. This is what I did. You could do this in your next practice. Show up in the gym in South Carolina, first time with a group of 30-some athletes, and we circled up. I said, all right, I want to know what you hope to get out of these next 2 days together. I had them share with each other first, so they at least got to practice articulating what they wanted. And then I went around the entire group of 30 and had them share. And to a player, every player said something that was individual skill focused. I want to improve my shooting, improve my footwork, improve my finishing, improve my vision, ball handling. It was all individual focused. I was in there to install lock left. No one said anything about lock left, right? So they're coming in and they have this desire and expectation lens that like they're looking for this thing. So if they're looking for red, right? But I'm in here teaching them green. They're going to leave being like, I didn't get anything out of that. I have to relate green to red to get them engaged. You can do the exact same thing your next practice, and you don't have to change your objectives. You might just change the frame that you put the objective in so that they engage. But I also help them. So that's one thing you can do. The second step to that, which is what I also did, is I reframed for them. Said, here's your frame. You're looking for something that fits in this frame of your individual development, right? And I said, oftentimes players have what we call the disease of me, and they don't even know it. And the disease of me is one of selfishness, right? And they see everything through how it helps them. One of the most beautiful and challenging parts of being on a team is actually to cure the disease of me and then see how you can focus on others and be team focused. So I'm going to ask you to do this again. If you couldn't focus on anything self-serving, instead you thought about what you needed to give in order for your team and your program to go over these next 2 days, what would that be? Then everything changed, right? And so by reframing before we started, I think it helped us improve faster. So that's an exercise you can use yourself.
There must be something to this savvy method, because I had a very similar experience. I asked the group of athletes I was working with. We had about 15 high school players and then 35-ish middle schoolers, because we were going fifth through eighth grade. And I asked them what they wanted to get out of this experience. And that is very disease of me. And then I reframed it towards, okay, what if you showed up to these 2 days? Like, what can I give to my teammates? What experience can I provide for them? How can I make my teammates better? And then what if we did that every single day? Right. And just like giving them a new perspective on their experience, because, hey, you picked the team sport, right? You didn't pick golf or tennis, you know? So, all right, let me use this. So you talked about what they wanted to get out of it and how they were showing up. They were showing up as a individual skill. That's what they were expecting. Like, hey, some coach is coming in to work with us. Oh, awesome. I'm going to learn how to be a better shooter. When you're there to more install systems, I think that's the miss too. We like to circle back to 15% of practices or games. Players show up wanting to play games and practice. They don't show up excited to do this closeout drill or this footwork drill. So talk me through, knowing that players want to play games, coaches want to do drills because they think that's the best way to teach. talk me through, now bring me to the gym in South Carolina. How do you teach through games? Or if you want to just share the North Carolina experience of how that conversation went and how they were open to new ideas, you take it wherever you want it.
Yeah. Here's where I want to go first, actually, is teaching through games, regardless of how you do it, how much you do it, will achieve what you want to achieve faster. Here's a very common problem. You have a talented player that you need to be on the team because of their physical gifts and skill, but they just don't compete very hard. They don't play very hard. They're very disease of me. They're very about themselves. You know, there's no one can take their spot, so they don't give their best, and it impacts everybody else. Most teams have someone like that on their team, and it's a challenge. They're the one that's not really paying attention. They distract you as a coach, all these things. We had a player like that in South Carolina, and the way to engage them more was not run drills longer. I put that best, most talented player on the weaker team and just had him get beat up. He just lost like three games in a row. He didn't like that. And so what did he do? He played the hardest I saw him play over the whole weekend, right? So like you can yell, scream, berate, plead, you know, beg someone to display the qualities that you want, or you can just shape the environment through games and where, what team you put them on, the scenario you put them in. And other people need different, you know, to be in a different scenario. They don't need to get beat up to get what you want. And then you highlight it, you recognize it, you celebrate it, have a one-on-one conversation with them, which is what we did. And this player moved along. He got closer to standard based on using a game. I don't think we could have gotten there through use of drills. So that's just one small example. I took it in a different direction, but I thought it was valuable.
Yeah, no, that's good. It reminded me of, again, a conversation that we had with the athletic department yesterday. Is one of the coaches on there, we're talking about the rule of 3, 10, and 30. And I'll just quickly go through it, but don't give your team more than three things. So limit your instruction to three things so you don't overload their working memory. The activity shouldn't last longer than 10 minutes because too long, you're going to lose some engagement. And can we get them going in 30 seconds or less so we don't kill their sweat, right? Because you're going to lose that player that you were referencing as well if you're talking for too long. So I made our time together yesterday very interactive too. So I had every coach just think of their favorite or one, an activity, drill, game that they do in practice frequently. Coaches, if you're listening, pick one right now. You could probably pick one of your favorites in 5 seconds or less. And then if you had to limit yourself to only give them three things to get them started in 30 seconds or less, what are those three things? You should know those things. And I think a lot of times those three things should just be the organization of the game. Blue, you're on offense. White, you're on defense. Start with a ball screen. Play in the five by ones and twos. Go. And you might want to tell them, well, we're doing this for ball screen defense, or we're doing this for ball screen reads, or we're doing this to install. And it doesn't matter. Just get them going. And then we're going to layer something on top. Okay, perfect. Now when we set the ball screen, let's set it at this angle. Okay, everybody see that angle? Cool. Ready? Go. 7 seconds or less. And then, okay, now when we're setting the ball screen, screener, arrive alone. So create some separation between you and your defender. Ready? Go. And just, that's, we don't have to do a drill for that. We can do a drill for that. But the problem with that is they don't have experience to draw on. So if you're wanting your team to set a different ball screen angle, well, let them set the angle that's default to them. And maybe that's allowing the on-ball defender to go over. So then you could say, Tyler, all right, the on-ball defender is going over. We actually want them to go over. So we force them in the coverage. So let's try this way. Tyler now has experience to draw back on. Okay, I did set it like this and they were going under. I know what that feels like. How can I change that? So get them in a game. We'd call it a game sandwich, but maybe we stop and drill it with a skinny, or maybe we just tell them, right? Maybe it's just showing them, instructing them, and then go do it. So yeah, I mean, that was similar to my takeaways in Iowa. I posted this in our community, but you know, we think about improvement as like 1% better every single day, which is great, right? And we should embrace that. That is what we're doing. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint, but you can get better like really, really fast too. And we did that through aligning on language, through film breakdown, through having the players break down the film, share their learnings, and me just asking questions. And what we got, where we started to arrive to is, man, assistant coaches would chime in and say, we haven't taught that well enough, or we did not emphasize that enough. And now I'm seeing how critical that component is to lock left. So one of the I'll give you a tangible takeaway for just lock left was, we did the film session as the players started trickling out to the floor. Coaches kind of hung around. They were asking me some follow-up questions, and they said, you know, we play with the shot clock here and we're really good in like the first 10 to 15 seconds of the shot clock, but we just get worn down in that last 10 to 15 seconds. And I was like, oh, well, we're not disruptive enough. You know, we're not sniping passes on the free side. We're not making the ball go enough. We're not dictating the terms if we're allowing teams to run offense and get deep into the shot clock. Like, just be more disruptive and you don't have to worry about getting worn down late. And they were just like, new perspective offers new solutions. Instead of like, how do we get better deep in the shot clock? It's just like, how do we not let offense get deep into the shot clock? So just more of being the actor versus the reactor, or playing offense when you're on defense, was a complete mindset shift for them.
That's good. Lock left, nugget alert. Snipe passes harder. In your 2-day install, what percent of possessions did the lock left defense get beat with a backdoor pass?
I don't know that we hit one.
Same. 2 days of install, not a single one. Not a single one. Yet, how many times did we allow a pass to the free side? Many, many, many. Snipe passes harder. I mean, it's probably the most undertaught, like, low-hanging fruit, absolute gold in lock left. Just snipe those passes so much harder. The way we're playing on the ball, make that backdoor pass twice as difficult against any other defense. So coaches develop a fear of getting beat backdoor based on traditional on-ball defense. With the way we play on ball, it makes it very, very difficult. The way we play on the wall makes it very, very difficult. So give it up. Everything is connected. And I was just reminded of that.
Yeah. Here's a similar lock left nugget alert. When we could get back into our roles, when we had the sniper, you know, on the free side, we were pretty good at sniping passes. I'll shout out to that team. But when the other team's racker did not have the ball on the left side, like in the action spot, we didn't snipe. So when we changed ball location, they did not make the connection of, no, that pass is going to the right side or the free side of the floor. You're sniping that. They really only thought that snipe was from that one position, like to the gap to the left of the wolf.
Perfect. Okay, so don't teach that. This goes back to a games approach we were talking about. So once we recognize a deficiency like that, what most coaches would do is to say, hey, let's set this all up, right? And then let me teach this thing for you. And then expect that to change in their play. Instead, I wouldn't teach it. Instead, all I would do is say, all right, here we go. We're playing 5-on-5. We're locking left. Let's give a KO for a right-hand drive to the rim. All right, let's play. And then wait for it. It's going to happen. Wait for that scenario to happen and freeze it. And then in that scenario, you teach it because you're already in it. It just happened. You don't have to create it. It organically happened. Then lock the start of it. Okay, for the rest of this 5-on-5 game, we're actually going to start with the ball in this position. Whatever, we'll enter it to the right wing. And the KO is any pass to the free side from the right wing, we're playing. But every time there's a dead ball, we're going to enter from the right wing. So they just need more reps in that scenario. They've generally started in the scenario where they're successful. You identify a weakness. We call that black lighting. You identify a weakness. You identify a deficiency. Then use a game, some sort of constraint, to get more reps at it and to prioritize it through a constraint, as opposed to let's run a bunch of drills or some shell for this thing.
Yeah, it goes back to like they don't have the experience to draw on. And then, a common question we always get is like, okay, well, all right, you're breaking down my film, you're giving me this feedback. Well, how do I work on it? It's like, just recreate it. just start as close as you can to that situation on every dead ball, just like you said. So, and I like that, like black light, like let's play 5-on-5 to find it and then let's spotlight it, right? So black light to find it, spotlight it.
Black light, spotlight. That's a good connection.
All right. Hey everybody, this is Tyler and I'd like to personally invite you to join our free Savvy Coaching community. Post any question you have here in our chat and get your questions answered, as well as get access to all of our free resources in our Savvy community. We've got it all here for you. So click the link below and we'll see you inside.
One more thing on this games approach thing. And actually, let me actually pull up my presentation because I thought this was a very valuable and actionable piece. I want to share 5 small ways you can make your games 5% more effective. The ones that you are running. I actually have this whole presentation called the Savvy Game Model. If you want this presentation, all you got to do is email me, tyler@savvycoach.com. I'll just personally send you this presentation of our Savvy Game Model. Gosh, there's so many things, but I just want to give one here. Mark, feel free to chime in as you see fit, but let me present. These are 5 ways to make your games a little bit more effective. Okay, here's one. Play a game first. And by first, I mean early in your practice. I asked the coaches that were present there, I said, raise your hand if you got players that come in with low energy, a lot of hands. Raise your hand if you got players that you wish came in earlier to practice, a lot of hands. Raise your hand if you feel like you've got to, throughout the practice, you got to like get some momentum going before you actually start competing, a lot of hands. Raise your hand if you start with a game, no hands. Start your practice with a game. I fully embraced that this weekend. The first thing we did every time we got onto court was 5-on-5. Like you might do some injury prevention or body prep stuff, whatever, but like, boom, energy's up. People are dialed in. They're not showing up late because they know that they're competing right away. Second thing, when you're using a small-sided game for developing reads, give the person making the read 3 reps in a row before you rotate them out. That allows them to implement feedback. That allows them to make changes. That allows them to actually grow. When they rotate out after 1, they're not actually able to make a change. They're not able to implement feedback. Learning comes when they implement the feedback or implement the learning, not when they hear the learning. So a minimum of 3 reps. I like 3 to 5 in a row for whatever read you're working on. If you're working on sniping passes to the free side, leave the defense in a minimum of 3 reps in a row. You know, one way that we do that is say we're playing 3-on-3 snipe. We say you have to get 3 stops in a row in order to get off. That's going to make sure that that defender is in that spot 3 times in a row and they can improve their sniping each time. Third one, when playing games, make sure the player is passing and not rotating out of the passer spot. That allows them 3 reps in a row making the passing read at least, and that requires them to actually improve their timing, their accuracy, their read of the pattern. Most often when we're playing games that requires a passer, you're the passer as the coach, or a coach is the passer. And that is missing out on usually what's the most important development opportunity. Fourth, don't develop skill outside of an action. So if you're trying to develop the skill of ball handling, don't do stationary ball handling. Work on ball handling out of a ball screen. How can you control the defender? How can you change your speed and direction? How can you use angles out of a ball screen? If you're working on shooting, shoot out of a zoom. Right? So use action for your skill development as opposed to doing it independent. It will transfer to your game better. And then lastly, everybody wants to make more free throws. I think that shooting free throws, like shooting 20 free throws in practice, is an absolute waste of time because players miss free throws in games because of pressure. There's no pressure when you shoot a set of 20 free throws. Just validate every game with a swish to win. Guess what? There's going to be a lot of. There's going to be a lot of pressure. And you're going to get more close games because if Mark would have won 5-1, he's probably not going to switch his first free throw. And that gives us a chance to catch up and creates more tight, high-intensity, high-pressure game situations, which is what you want. You want more high-intensity reps. That's all that you want. You don't really care who wins the game. So validate the switch free throw, and you will get more pressure-filled free throws and more game-like reps. 5 simple things to make, I think, your games 5% better.
Really good. Let me share something that happened in our community on the validate with a win. We had this discussion just last week in our Savvy Coaching community.
If you're not in our coaching community, what are you waiting for?
Yeah.
Go to savvycoach.com. Give it a try. All right, I'll stop there.
Yeah, I mean, okay, look, it's a great time to get in, right? Like we're about to crank up our academic year. You probably are getting really excited about your season. I guarantee you, you'll get, I mean, just like what Tyler just shared, like that's 1% of what's in our community, in our classroom. So if you haven't done it, if you're on the fence, here's your nudge. There's your sign. Go do it. And if you don't like it, we'll give your money back. Okay. Validating with a win. A lot of coaches, I first saw this from Vance Wahlberg, dribble drive motion. He kind of first one to validate a win with his blood drills, but they would just line up at the free throw line. No one like lined up to rebound. And it was just, if you made it, you win. If you miss it, you lose. Here's a way that we made it more game-like, because I agree, volume free throws, I've never seen any type of evidence that shows that that transfers. In fact, I've seen the opposite. Dwight Howard, I saw at a Lakers practice, they had a board where they had all their free throws. He shot 85% from the free throw line in practice, and I'm pretty sure he was a below 50% free throw shooter in game. So there's the evidence that I've seen contrary to volume free throws. So what we would do is, let's say we were playing by eights to two 8 by twos and threes. I like that because it goes really fast, about a 5-minute game. If you take a possession off, you're probably going to lose, or it makes it really hard to win. Let's say Tyler scores the eighth point and he's going to go to the line. Everybody's going to line up. If he misses it, we play through the free throw rebound. If he misses it, we play to 10 points now by twos and threes. So we just resume to another basket. If Tyler's team gets offensive rebound put back, that's the 10th point. They go to the free throw line. If they make it, game's over. They have validated. If they miss, then they lose. So you can't miss two free throws and win. So you miss two free throws, automatic loss. Let's rewind that scenario. Tyler makes the winning basket, obviously a three-pointer. So he has 8 points. He goes to the line. He misses. Other team gets the rebound, and they score the 10th point. Maybe the score was 8-7. The other team hits a three to make it 10-8. If they make it, game's over. If they miss it, we go to 12, and then it's do or die, right? If the next team to make or miss the free throw wins or loses. I found that's a great way to incorporate game-like free throws in your practice. I'll give you one more. How do you work on free throws through playing games? Play and one. You can do this 2-on-2, 3-on-3, 4-on-4, 5-on-5. I love it 5-on-5. We're just going to play live. So Tyler said we're going to get this team warmed up and we're going right in the 5-on-5. 5-on-5 and one, anybody that scores, it's an automatic and one. So even if they weren't fouled, they go to the free throw line, they shoot one free throw. So they're doing it within game context. And that gives you an opportunity to set up your press. Other teams set up their press break. So it's a forcing function to work on those, like, you know, free throw rebounding, free throws, but also some pressure situations as well.
Okay. I love the and one. I've not done that before and I'm going to do it. And that's really what we're trying to give you here on the hours, is we're trying to give you just like things you can implement right away. Speaking of things that you can implement right away, as the listening of this podcast, we are going to be jumping in to the 30 mistakes the coaches make that can kill their season. And we're going to be posting one mistake per day throughout the entire month of August. And we're going to help you eliminate those 30 mistakes. The quickest way to improvement of a team, of a coach, of your business, in your life, is not through the addition of things. It's actually through the elimination of things. And through the month of August, we want to help you eliminate most, if not all, of these 30 mistakes. So head over to savvycoach.com. Come and give us a try. Get access to everything else in our community. You know, hopefully you can eliminate some of the drills. Hopefully today you eliminated some of the free throws that you're shooting in bulk in practice. We want to give you 30 more things that you're going to eliminate. Mark, anything to add on that one?
No, man. I think that's a great way to end this one. So
I agree.
Thanks for spending this time with us. Hopefully you took 1, 2, 3 things away from this that you can go implement in your program right away. And if you like it, come back for more. Join as a savvy coach, and we'll give you much more that you can implement in your program for this season.
Stay savvy.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.